Hi everyone, it's Judy Warner. Welcome back to the On Track podcast. Thanks for joining us again this week. Today we have our friend Gabriel Goldstein, who's been described from our sales associate Antonio as a devout Altium designer disciple. He is a chief product designer and a tech entrepreneur, and he's going to share with you his recent transition to Altium 365 Pro and everything he learned along the way, the good, bad, and the ugly. So lean in, enjoy. I'll see you on the other side.
Welcome to Altium's On Track podcast, where we talk to leaders about PCB design, tackling subjects ranging from schematic capture all the way to the manufacturing floor. I'm your host, Judy Warner. Please listen in every week and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all your favorite podcast apps. And be sure to check out the show notes at altium.com/podcast, where you can find great resources and multiple ways to connect with us on social media.
Well, hi, Gabriel. Welcome. Thanks so much for joining us this week on the On Track podcast.
Thanks, Judy. Glad to be here.
Well, I thought we'd start out today by having you introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about your background and about some of the companies you've had the pleasure of working with over the years.
All right. Yeah, thank you. My name is Gabriel Goldstein. I am founder of Anidia Engineering and Escape Room Techs. Various different times. I've had the engineering company for nearly 20 years. And basically, you know, I was an engineer at a company, and it was a startup. It was going downhill. I said, well, I guess now is the time to, you know, start my own company, because my parents were entrepreneurs, my grandparents were entrepreneurs, and two of my three siblings are. So that's what we just do. So had an engineering, started an engineering company, and eventually started Escape Room Techs as well, probably about 3 or 4 years ago. And we've built lots of really cool, neat things over the years. A lot of commercial, industrial controls and automation type stuff.
So it cracked me up when I was doing a little research on both Anidia and Escape Room Techs. I saw the name of the controller was like Badass Controller or something. That was fun. So tell us a little bit about those escape room tech items. And then I noticed there's some really cool stuff that you did at Anidia, including a technology that ended up on Shark Tank. So tell us about some of the fun projects you've worked on.
Yeah, absolutely. Probably one of the most fun products we had ever built was for a company called Geek My Tree. And the gentleman was one of these guys who would like decorate his whole street, and apparently even decorated some of his neighbors' houses, and they would charge and raise money for and donate it and stuff. And everyone's always asking, like, how do you do this? And so he started experimenting, getting the lights done, and he got some lights out of Asia and was putting things together. But what he lacked was a controller that would actually replay his creations. And actually, to his credit, he was really great with the design of his lighting animations. I think that's really one of the things that really kicked him off. So so he came to us, and we built this little box, and apparently Shark Tank was approaching him at one point in time. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't quite ready. Then we got the box ready and controller and packaged all that for him, built him a couple thousand of them. And he went on Shark Tank, and we built the Geek My Tree version 1. And it is no longer available now, but it was a big fun ride that definitely enjoyed. And a few years ago, we got involved with escape rooms and started building a lot of different controllers, because we found that a lot of our customers, or a lot of the people in escape rooms, I should say, with the whole like Adafruit and Spark Fun stuff, people are really good with just kind of like, buying a bunch of stuff and trying to make it work and stuff. But they really didn't have a lot of good, technical background. And mm-hmm. So, software is very forgiving, so we started off doing the hard hardware part, and we were successful with that round. And eventually we realized that our customers don't even want to program, so one of my developers put together some software on one of our existing hardware boards. I think the first lines on my mouth were like, that's really badass, and it became the Badass Controller. I don't even say that very often, but that's what came out of my mouth. So yeah, we made the Badass Controller.
I love that. That's what a funny name. It just made me laugh.
We're going to try to make it an acronym, but we never forget. We just moved on. And, you know, it's like, oh, it stands for something. No, it doesn't. It's just cool.
Well, it's a fun name anyways. Put a smile on my face. So how did you end up becoming a product engineer? I know you said you come from a lineage of entrepreneurs, but were you one of these kids that took your mom's toaster apart and stuff?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I routinely will claim that, yeah, I was an engineer when I was five. And yes, my dad worked at a men's clothing chain that he actually, well, his dad owned. And, you know, he'd bring home old copiers and add, you know, when adding machines were electromechanical, you know, nightmares and, you know, things. So it took all that stuff apart, put it back together. I was fabricating woodworking in my room growing up. We, you know, when a grocery store would close down, we'd go pull the motion detectors off the, you know, when they actually would pull them down and play with them. Yeah, so I was always doing that stuff. But eventually went to UCF, graduated in 2000, and got my computer engineering degree.
What is UCF? I don't know that.
University of Central Florida.
Florida. Okay, great. Okay, so let's dig into the good stuff. I know you'd mentioned to me, you called a disclaimer, but I would say in the community that you're speaking with right now, it'd be bragging rights, is that you like things done right. And so when you recently, when we were introduced, you told me that you were about to take on a big data migration and you went away for a while. And so now I'm excited to hear about everything you learned and how that went. And I knew that there's a lot of people out there would probably, instead of, you know, reinventing the wheel, that you'd have a lot of good takeaways to share with them. So we know that you like to do things right, like most of our design engineering community. But what sort of led you to go that direction in the first place? I imagine there were some problems you were trying to solve, sort of a high level, a business level, right, to save money or time or, you know, increase efficiency or reliability. What were those things for you specifically, Gabriel?
Well, so yeah, we had a customer that I was working for that did some DoD work, and the requirement was to basically migrate them onto Altium. And I was really not familiar with, one of my other engineers had told me about Altium, and I had worked, sorry, not Altium, told me about Altium, but told me about the new A365 stuff. I've been using Altium since I was like 20, like 99 SE before it was even Altium, ProTel.
Right. ProTel days, right.
And so he told me how cool this was, and he just did this migration. And I played with it, and I didn't have a design. I was active on the point in time, but I played with that a little while, and I thought this was pretty cool. I saw it. Didn't go well, actually. Just going in blindly because I was really not one who likes to read directions. By the time someone was actually paying me to go through and do all this stuff, I took a lot more time and a lot more research to it. So I actually started a whole document to the management of, like, you know, why Altium? Why are we doing this? And they had heard of it. It wasn't like a cold sell by any means. But between their particular requirements, doing DoD type work and government things, they could not just roll out the generic, A365, because that's cloud hosted. And when you do DoD right. work, they really frown on, the yes. general cloud. Mm-hmm. Concord and A365 Pro are, basically the same thing, just more of an implementation back-end difference. Mm-hmm. But so we put together a whole proposal and plan for them, and I was leading them through the whole process to get them onto it. So they have a bunch of designs in an older, very limited CAD software. We figured out how to get that imported into Altium, how to ultimately create parts and to create parts from those imports and load them into the database and get everything figured out. So it was usable. And we also, apart from the importing process, we also laid out the entire process for creating components, because while Altium will do all this stuff for you, you still kind of have to have a process that mm-hmm. fits you know, fits your business and what you're doing. So, yeah, that's something Altium just can't come out and say, here's exactly how every business should run, because, you know, you lose a lot of business very quickly that way. So, I mean, Altium 365 and Concord are awesome as far as the way that they can manage data. You know, the idea that, you know, shared directories and, you know, flat file system stuff is just not the way modern technology works in a complicated system. And so many things, so many other systems work like this. We just take it for granted. I mean, every website is just a database front end to something else and put together quickly. But obviously ECAD is really far more complicated than most websites in that regard. So tying those two things together, those two ideologies together is really powerful and very useful. It's been very, very cool.
Well, it's really nice to hear that from you, you know, rather than from inside the walls of Altium, right? Because that's really where the rubber meets the road. Now, in regards to DoD, another installation I'm aware of, they were basically keeping the data library in a way where they could share that on the cloud, but not the design, so they could guard that IP. Is that similar to what you were doing for your customer?
We did everything behind a firewall. Concord was done completely on premises. There is no outside connection to it at all. You have to actually get into the VPN to even get to any of the Concord stuff. So that's what that particular customer, you know, wanted to do. We actually had discussed the model that you just had mentioned. Mm-hmm. But depending on what you're doing, there are lots of rules and nuance to, you know, what you have out there. But we had considered, you know, a cloud-based library, but honestly, for them and the way they were working, it was easier to put everything behind a firewall and call it a day.
Right. That makes perfect sense. So I know, like you said, everybody's process, but I know that the DoD has some, you know, hard stops and things that you just cannot do, period, which is wise. So when you wrote up sort of this business case, what were some of the things that you were saying that this is why it's beneficial? Like, what stood out to you?
Right. So what I walked into, and without like too much detail, like I said, flat file system, you know, there were some systems there, you know, there existed a, you know, okay, we output our Gerbers. Okay, well, they're in a directory with a, you know, a time day stamp. Okay, well, that's nice. But anyone can go in there and play with it. You know, okay, we have, you know, here's the design. And, you know, the design is, you know, there's a file name that has, you know, V102, V103, you know, completely, you know, so no version control, no management on that kind of stuff. And so, and that's for very typical for a lot of people. I mean, I still come across other people all the time who are like, oh yeah, I just put a date in front of every file name. I'm like, okay. Like, people just, you know, I mean, that's the thing is you take smart people and everyone's equally smart in their own mind. Your own personal bias.
Confirmation bias.
It's something like that. But so, I mean, you just do your system because that's what your smart people do. They make systems and sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad. Anyway, but obviously, you know, Concord and Altium 65 are Git backed for their, you know, the Git version control system and with a database system on top of it that organizes the whole thing together. So, you know, the idea to not have to manage any of that stuff. And before Altium 65, I was always use SVN, SVN DB libs, which was awesome. Like all my boards always had a 3 and now 4-digit number on them. So I could pick up any PC board I built. Oh, that's the check-in number. Right. And I've had that for many years. But this makes it much easier. You know, I had to create and build all those systems to make that stuff happen. And this just kind of happens. Having all that stuff in there, having the part creation built into it as far as, you know, be able to find pre-built parts, having to figure out, you know, crosses and the proper hierarchy of a manufacturer part number, supplier part numbers, and how you want to get it. You can really just forget about all those details are kind of managed for you. Particularly the active bomb thing actually is really slick. I mean, it's, you know, some of the tools can be a little pedantic, like, okay, I'm okay with this little light being, you know, yellow,
yes.
But like, at least you looked at it and gave it a little more thought than you then just find out, oh, your board just got made and the part you put on is obsolete, you know? So, you know, you still have to kind of make those calls as an engineer. But to know that you even looked at it, had to go through it and, you know, at least flag it and say, yeah, okay, I'm aware of this issue and I'll deal with it, is much better than finding out way too late. So yeah, it's pretty slick in that way. It's very handy.
That's great. All right. Let's, thanks for sharing that. I just thought before we got too far into the weeds that, you know, for those who might be driving business cases, that would be useful. You said something as far as one more addition to that is, you know, say using some of the engine that I is driven with Octopart, that sometimes those searches you're doing, you know, people love DigiKey because it's just easy to find parts, but you're saying in some case you found that easier than DigiKey?
Yeah, I mean, sure. I mean, there are certain things as, yeah, I mean, when you're like, particularly with trying to find crosses, I mean, if you just, I mean, because Octopart and Altium are aggregating like tons of different vendors, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that, I'm not sure the correct term of it, but like it's not necessarily gray market, but you have a lot of people who buy like either, you know, new old stock or they, you know, happen to have a reel of these things or whatever else. And so there's a lot of other vendors in there that are really handy. So when you need to find one of those parts that, hey, is actually sold out DigiKey, you might find one of these guys that's like a local stocking distributor that actually has this part and are, you know, willing to sell it to you. Yeah. So I have found on that side of things, you know, particularly with crosses, that it will dig a lot deeper than you necessarily can. You know, like chip components, and there's a couple other names. Like they said, there's not DigiKey, Mauser, Newark, but it's a big distributor. But you know, lots of little guys who actually have stock, they put it up there, and Altium references it and pulls it in and says, "Oh, look, I can go get that part and, you know, save my tail."
So which is cool. Huge, right? Yeah. In these days of component shortages, especially on passives and of course microcontrollers and stuff like that. But
yep, very handy.
So if I were to sum up, then I would say, well, especially when you're working with the DID, reliability is a big thing because there's a lot on the line when you're dealing with, you know, jets and weapons and life and limb kind of things. But reliability, money savings, efficiency, kind of all the things everybody's after all the time.
Yeah. I mean, when you get into the quality management stuff, I mean, you just can't throw in any part. You'll have to, everything has to be, you know, first tier type stuff. But I mean, in the particular, a lot of these situations are things like, because you do some DoD work, like you kind of do everything like you do DoD work. And so it becomes a little more complicated for everything else, but you know, it's a process and practice and process for that matter.
Yes, that's a good point. But I think to your point, it's sort of like rising tides raises all boats, right? It makes your work better. Maybe it's overkill on some of your, say, IoT devices or, you know,
sure,
Christmas tree stuff, lights, yeah. You know, but I think it helps your reliability and your efficiency across the board. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's dig in. So my goal here is for you just to tell us, how was it? You know, what did you like? What was rough? Where'd you hit snags? How'd you get through those? So we can share with the listeners today. So let's talk about your first point, which you mentioned is, you know, starting out with something like maybe prototype first or maybe the prototype and implementation, should be different. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. So my history with Altium and Protel is like a blessing and a curse. Like, I know how I've done things for 20 years and now I have to do things in a new, different way. And there are some things that, you know, translate over, you know, directly. And there are some things that, like, okay, I have to think about this differently now.
Yeah.
You know, a good thing and bad thing about, you know, with you know, Altium's, you know, evolution is, like, it still supports the very same stuff that it did when it came out. You know, I know when it came out, but I know 99SE was the first version I used. So I, at least for the last 20 years, you know, you can still manage your parts in a completely flat, you know, schematic SCH lib and a PCB lib if you really want to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, integrate libraries. Were they a good idea? I don't know, but they're still there. Yes, they're supported, right? So because there's so many ways to do that, and because of the legacy support, it can be a little bit, it can be a little daunting, a little overwhelming, like when you go into it and try to figure out, like, okay, exactly how this is working. So, like, I know in, you know, in engineering and particularly in product development, sometimes you make a prototype. It's like, this isn't the real thing, but hey, I just want to see how all this stuff actually works together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, kind of like making fun of this, like, you know, I had this idea of how to do it right. Well, the comical, you know, corollary to that is, you know, my version of right, eventually I wasn't willing to put the time to do it in my, like, my right way, because I had to get something done. And it wasn't like it was any worse. I just realized that, okay, some of the stuff doesn't matter. Like, I thought it'd be really cool to, actually, kind of funny thing. I had a job when I was 12. My job was to take inventory of a plumbing store. And I came up with an entire, like, this is the first time in my life I had to actually figure out how to do an inventory control system. And, like, I could spend a lot of time, ultimately was the way I came up with this. I could spend a lot of time creating this really crazy, cool coded part numbering system.
Right.
Or I could start at one and just number them.
Right.
Ultimately, you know, you find something in the middle. I mean, ultimately what I ended up doing was I said, look, there's a lack of passers. So I think I have a res prefix I ended up on, and I have a lot of capacitors and resistors and everything else. I just left is like components, which is the standard starting point for what you have there. But originally I started off with this, okay, I want these group over here. I want INDs. I want this. I want that, because I had other systems that kind of mirrored stuff like that. But like, I also just use a lot of generic manufactured part numbers in my previous numbering systems. So having to deal with the extra number, like I get it. It makes sense while you have it. It becomes this unique, you know, not necessarily world unique, but, you know, unique to your system, you know, way to access that, and that makes sense. But ultimately, while I had this, you know, really great smart idea of, you know, how I want everything done the right way, ultimately I was like, okay, this stuff doesn't matter. And it doesn't, I mean, you know, granted, if you have a lot more time and stuff, but anyway, to digress, my point was, related to that is to, you know, come up with enough of a system that works and then, you know, implement that. But I mean, it has the ability to, you know, a much larger company, maybe that's a bigger deal. And I know you can integrate with other people's part management systems and stuff.
Right.
I've not had to deal with that part of it. But yeah, most of what comes with Altium for a from a start template thing is a good start. Mm-hmm. And work with that. I think ultimately the biggest things I went up, like I said, because resistors and capacitors become such a large quantity in your database, I wanted to be consistent. And so I actually ended up writing a document that talked about how we name resistors. You know, it's RES, comma, you know, size, then value, then tolerance, then, you know, special things, and with SMT through hole and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, actually picked out, okay, here's the resistor symbol I want to use. And logged that symbol number into basically just tables in a Word doc that said, okay, well, so if someone goes to make another resistor someday, it's like, I just don't pull out the short little squiggly one. It's like, there's the resistor that, you know, works every. And then ultimately made those in the templates and made like 0603 and 0402 templates. So those things that have a lot of commonality to it and very little variation become very consistent. Which that was important to me, because I hate looking at your mom and you know, sort in alphabetical orders of your sisters or your capacitors, and they all have different format. Like some are caps, some are like digit key descriptors, some are Mauser descriptors, some have some other craziness in there. Like, you know, that's
Who hates that more than you do?
John.
No, your EMS provider.
Oh.
Who has to deal with that bomb? Used to be there, and it'd be one of my guys used to say, Judy, there's no such thing as an approximate part number. You know, like a few numbers with an XXX, like read my mind.
Well, that's so I mean, just kind of case in point, like I would like before Altium 365, I would basically use like the root part number, the root manufacturer part number, but I would always keep as my unique tag number, but then I would always have the distributor part number of like what had all the tape riddle codes and stuff on it that actually was a real, or if I was really lazy, I'd just say, here's a DigiKey part number and call it done. But yeah, it depends how much effort I put.
There's a bunch of project managers that are, you know, like fingernails on the chalkboard to hear
There are no approximate part numbers. Yes.
There are no approximate. What did I just say? Yeah. There's no approximate, manufactured numbers.
It's funny. Yeah. I get stuff back like that. I'm like, this is just a tape and real code. Come on, figure it out.
Yeah. But you know how many of those they have to look at a day?
I know.
So it's those little things. Anyways, it matters internally, right? Because it slows things down internally, you know, between a design team, but it also hurts you on the back end. So yeah, especially if one of those numbers is wrong and you come back with a bad part on your board, then everybody's bummed and in trouble.
It reminds me of an old story. Literally, I used resistor codes to call out resistors. I used like 102, 103, 104 for like a 1K, 10K, 100K. The guy literally put down 101 ohm, 102 ohm, and 103 ohm. And I was 22 and I would still be sad myself. I'm like, a grown ass man. And you build boards for a living. You thought I needed 102, 103 ohm resistors. I'm like, okay, that is just super precision right there. I'm like, okay. Anyway, I digress. So I mean, you know, this is this is one of those things, like, you know, I always get made fun of, like, that I don't read directions. But you know, I'll tell my kids, I'm like, look, I've put together a dozen bikes. I don't need to read a direction to put together a bike. I know how this goes. I don't need a direction to put in a dishwasher or a refrigerator. Like, this is, but you know what? I've not built a lot of DAB management systems for, you know, ECAD, you know, part numbering systems and such. So yeah, I probably should have read more directions in the beginning. I took a little, took some hard knocks in the beginning.
Read directions or don't read directions, because I think most people, except a few personality types, don't like. I hate reading directions, which is why I put together a piece of IKEA furniture four times instead of one.
Yeah, IKEA is fun stuff. I will read IKEA directions because sometimes I know that those guys are smarter
than me. Oh, it's just one screw.
Oh, yeah.
It's just that's always just that one little piece. You're like, what is this? But I think building data management, there's a good corollary there, because some of that slop, you know, will bite you.
Unless you do it all the time, like, I don't need the redirections to go, you know, lay out circuits of most any kind, because I've done a lot of it. Yeah.
Right.
But I don't build data management systems very often. And, you know, when I was working at a plumbing shop, and you know, first time I did it in SVN DB Libs, and now, it can get very detailed, and ultimately, I think the incremental part number system with some very minor coding works out well, the prefix thing. But
So you're saying you took some hard knocks along the way. So for people who are listening, would you say read more directions, and you had a little bit of time? To your point is, you know, you're making all good points that I know people will resonate with. Even I resonate with, is, you know, you've got like your minimum viable product versus, you know, what you'd like to make the perfect thing you have in mind, or just get it out the door on time that it's good enough, you know, and yeah. There's always that tension. So do you think sort of learning as you go and trial and error was good enough? Or are you recommending that, no, take some time if you have the time to dig into it?
If you have the time, sure. You know, I mean, you know, read it all, digest it. But most engineers will probably relate to the fact that until you actually get in there and try it, it's like watching videos to learn how to drive or ride a bike. It's like, okay, yeah, that looks great. I will say that even as I muddled through a lot of the templating and gaining just right, I mean, yeah, I could be a little embarrassed that there's like, you know, 15 versions of my resistor template checked in, but ultimately I got over stuff like that. I mean, again, there's a lot of things that don't matter that, you know, we kind of want a certain way just to be engineers and being, you know, a little rigid in personality on occasion. It's not like you're gonna, you know, push a button and like, oh crap, I have to go reset my database. It's just another check-in. And ultimately I'm like, you know, that doesn't really matter. I got the few things I wanted to rewrite a certain way. And really what was more important is like, you know, I was only responsible for making, I don't know, 100 components, whatever it was. You know, the rest of the team is going to make 1,000 components. So once I kind of got it good enough, I just wrote the document and said, yeah, look, here's how to do it. Here's how it works. Here's the templating. Here's the formatting. I definitely beat up on some of the tech guys and support guys a bit. Like, okay, this is a little cumbersome, but it's just like this. Oh, I mean, John was awesome. He showed me like this cute little like I know all your grids work with cut and paste and stuff, but this one would not work the way I thought it was. And he mm-hmm. showed me what I was doing wrong. And like, yeah, you can build, like I had a note here, like, you know, you can build 1,000 resistors real easily with cut and paste mechanisms and building the part numbers and structures up in Excel. And he showed me that little demo. And I thought that was awesome to be able to, you know, create these things out and keep them consistent, because I actually wound up putting in the raw structured data for resistors mm-hmm. and built descriptions from that raw structured data. So they were all very consistent because they're just built in Excel table. That was a lot of fun. That was pretty cool. You need to kind of, if you have the time, you can build the whole system. And if you have the time to then just wipe it clean and start over, your company requires that kind of, structure and you have the resource to do that. Sure. I mean, I would build it, screw it up a few times until you got just right. And then execute.
Right.
But I mean, most of us don't have time for that. I mean, you can start off with the sample data. And in the sample data, there's a few different styles used throughout the system. Mm-hmm. And just trash and delete the styles that you don't like and start from that and copy and work from there. And you'll get built up what you want.
Right.
So
you're saying they're kind of a mixed bag, that they're not all useful. Maybe, or
they're all useful, but again, engineers being kind of perfectionists, like there are maybe two or three different resistor symbols in the database. Some people I was talking about someone I said earlier, like the one I like is like the relatively large resistor symbol from like OrCAD days. It's big. I gotta describe units, but then there's another one showed up one time that's much, much more squiggly and small. And like on one hand, I think that's great, but I like schematics are really big and, you know, uncluttered. So like I found the resistor symbol I wanted. Actually, I think I bought it from OrCAD. it's in there too, but I import stuff from long ago. And I had that there. Because the other thing too, is you go to swap your resistor symbols out later, and you'll find that, okay, well, you've built this resistor that way, and the one replacing with is that way. Now all your components have come unconnected. So yeah, those are the kind of things you want to get figured out in the beginning. Like you don't want to just, you're not going to just decide that you want to change your resistor symbol or you're going to, you know, and the templates are really good for like locking that down from the very beginning. Like this is the resistor I'm going to use. You know, it's called like Res-2. I don't know what happened to Res-1, but it's Res-2. And it is the resistor symbol that, and it's in the Altium database. And I put that, the SYM number in the document and in the template. So if you build a resistor, that's the symbol you get. And then I found, you know, 3 0603 resistor footprints and put those into the template. And there's some variation on the different sizes there, but I found the three that I thought were, you know, good and solid. And I guess, so they get built up that way, but it's, you know, ultimately I think it makes it a lot, makes the most sense to put a lot of effort into your R's and C's that in your parts that have a lot of consistency through them, because they're hard to maintain. Once you have like, once you get into like the parts that don't have that wide, you know,
right,
it's not likely you have 100 different ADCs in your library, right? The variation descriptions of what's important to all these and important to those doesn't matter so much.
Right.
I mean, the first two or three fields seem to be the same. You know, IC, ADC. Okay. Then after that, like you don't really care so much because you just don't have, you don't have as many of them on your BOM.
Got it.
So
with when you've got a lot of passives, right? There's so many of them in almost every design, and some designs are worse than others on that, especially if you go into like automotive and things like that. So you mentioned also about directories. What was your experience with directories?
Right. That was my observation there was just that, like I said, the sample data is a good place to start, but you do want to kind of study and figure out what part of it you want to keep. Again, this is probably a little bit more of a problem from like my history, where I came from, because I mean, like I kind of had this out with John a little bit. Like I liked having all my like resistors, all my 0603s in a folder. And John's like, look, you have like these really awesome, powerful search tools. Like, do you really care anymore? I said, yes. But to his point, I probably didn't need to as much. Right. So, I mean, you can put them all in the same pile. I think ultimately I decided, you know, because of the templating that was going to be best for my situation, but you know, it's not always, I mean, you just got it really came down to picking
habits.
Your battles.
Yeah, it's habits. And sometimes those habits are hard to change. And I think sometimes that's what keeps us stuck, right? Is because I think we've changed project management software, you know, half a dozen times here. And I scream every time it happens because it's like, I just figured it out. And I know where everything is, you know, and then you got to find out where everything is all over again. And so it's frustrating. Nobody likes that, you know? It's like, no, I know where I put it and I know where to find it, even if it's a bad old wonky way. And if I knew these three hotkeys, it would save me 3 hours
Creatures
a week.
Of habit.
You know, but I think that's a good takeaway that you are willing to kind of push up against it, but maybe think about adopting a new way that over time served you. You have sort of been in our conversations adamant about what you think is that you think the pro version is a must have. And can you talk about that? Oh, by the way, to our listeners, we keep mentioning John. We're talking about John Watson, who you'll know from the podcast before, who is now on staff here at Altium, and he's on our Altium 365 customer success team. So I sicked John on Gabriel and they had some hopefully fun and good conversations.
He was good.
I hope to keep her.
The pro version. I was, so in my initial, Altium migration document, I was kind of like, we probably don't need this. But once I dug into a little more, and I'm not going to blame anyone or call anyone out, but like, it was just basically I didn't understand what I was looking at or what I was being told for, or, you know, the significance of it. The ability to kind of track the life cycle of your products. Mm-hmm. I kind of have this vision that I'm still working through some of the details on it because I'm still relatively new on some of the stuff with it. Mm-hmm. Where like you make all these components and like I've always had this problem for, you know, with SVNDB libs. Like, okay, something goes obsolete. Okay, well, how do I deal with that in my database? Okay, well, I can set a flag, you know, if I'm managing the database myself. Okay, I made a new part. How do I know this part actually worked when I got on the board and my footprints were right? I mean, I've had interns who could not understand that the footprint symbol that he's looking at was from the bottom view. So a number of times I would get my parts mirrored, you know, so like I roughly have this concept of like, okay, well, after I make all my parts, I can select all the parts that are used on my board and I can put them into official prototype mode. And then that will rev all these parts in from basically draft to a prototype mode. So, hey, they've been out there. And when that board comes back, you know what I know if, you know, reasonably, if all these things actually soldered well, if the board works, I didn't have any bad footprints, whatever else. And then if all that's good, I can go release all those parts. And you know, you still might find problems with them, but at least you know and start to build up over time the reliability that your parts are actually made right and that you have confidence putting a part down to do things. In the consultancy, that was like always one of, I mean, I had a few things I would, you know, tip my hat off to, but you know, the idea that I had 2,000-3,000 parts ready to go already built in my database, and most designs I'd build only 2 or 3 new things, like that increases my reliability consistency quality of my designs of them working the first time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know when I first started, you know, as an engineer, I was 90% sure I was to get every hole size wrong on a through-hole part. Like, if there's a through-hole part, I was sure to get it wrong. it's just, you know, stupid things back then. But, you know, S&T obviously is far more forgiving with that. But, yeah. Knowing your parts have been validated and building that kind of process and system to go manage those things, very handy. The templating is technically, so, you know, very interesting caveat. The ability to edit templates is only available in the pro versions.
Oh, okay.
Technically, the standard versions all use templates, but you can't edit them. So it becomes one of these catch-22s. Like you see they're template driven, but you can't actually change them because that's what it's a pay for feature, which is fine. I get it, and it makes sense. But it's both versions use templating, but to be accurate, basically only advanced version, the pro version lets you edit them and manage them. I think there's a few other little nuances in there. Of course, all the Concord is like basically advanced or pro built in. But if you're running a team and you have, you know, there's more than you running the show, then you got to get the advanced stuff in there.
So for our listeners, the Altium 365 pro version includes pro version, which is a standard version and a pro version. I'll put those links below. That the pro version gives you Concord Pro so you can manage data, but it also gives you some nice little bells and whistles, and it also gives you an increased kind of a fast pass to the front of the line with support and all of that, which what did you think about that part?
So I've with that customer, you know, I had the advanced stuff and they were very like, I, you know, as engineers, we get very much like, I can just white knuckle figure this out. Eventually I'm just like, okay, what am I doing wrong here?
Right.
Because and sometimes I'm fine, you know, real issues. Sometimes they tell me something that, you know, so apparently like I got into it with one guy one time because apparently at some point in time, Altium changed the duplicate key from control D to control R.
Oh.
And so I'm like, dude, is this control D key? And it's like, no, it's control R. And I'm like, I'm probably older than you and been using Altium longer than you've been alive, but still. And apparently I went back and looked at the manual. I'm like, oh, they changed. but both the keys are still registered to do the same thing for duplicate and repeat.
I see.
I forget how I got. Oh yeah,
we like to do that just to screw with you guys.
Yeah, keep me on my toes. The reason I was into that was because there was a bug for like 5 minutes, and they did a hot fix for it shortly afterwards, where like it was like 21.1.1 or something like that, and when you would you were on the schematic screen and you would repeat things, which I mean I repeated that tool a lot. It wasn't drawing them properly, and then the scales were kind of off on. So anyway, some regression testing failed on that one, and that was the key I was using to copy these things. So trying to repeat things. And,
well, luckily, I kidding aside, we don't really like messing with your brains, but. But then we have neat things like hot fixes. When an FES scream, they tend to get right on and fix it because they really don't want to.
I just happened to be in this one part of the curve where we just happened to do this whole thing, and it was a brand new release that had come out. And, so we did a little bit more testing than we had planned on, but it ultimately all worked out. It was pretty short. It lasted a short period of time. So got through it.
Good. Well, why don't you sort of wrap this package up and just sort of, in conclusion, just talk about what it takes to bring up a new data management system. You mentioned templates and defaults. So, why don't you run those through us just as a way of review, and then I'll share some links and tell our listeners about that.
All right. Yeah. The, I found myself as I was kind of going through this, like just kind of realizing how all the things are connected, and all the documentation is there, but maybe I didn't find the document, or maybe I was just fighting with the things I thought I knew and understood and stuff. But I mean, like there's so many powerful things that in Altium, the way the parameters all link together, and there's so much automation and cool stuff through it that it's very hard to kind of understand, particularly if you're not familiar with it, and maybe you'd be better to not be familiar with Altium and actually just dive into all the documents and not be tainted by the history. But I think the thing that I didn't like, I want to jump into it. I want to get my parts right. And then I started making products, and I realized I couldn't make a product because all these other things weren't right. And it was grabbing templates from an old customer. And all. So the thing that I think at the end of the day, I kind of put together the order of the way these things should go is you should definitely make sure you have your templates and defaults. And when I say templates, these are the templates that are the file templates, like the ones that are your actual project template, the ones that actually put all your parameters in your projects, the ones that when you say file new schematic, like that's the file that goes and grabs, right? And you can get them. If you're a Altium 365 Concord user, you can pull down the latest copy from that and clone it and start from that to keep it all very Altium 365 ish or Git ish if you want to use that term. because I mean, I guess all the defaults are there. I mean, they're also in flat files, but. Like you can see it is more nicely organized in the templates folder for this thing. So you can start off with your schematic templates, your PC, even things like your PC library templates. Like if you want to have your PCB libraries match your layer stack up for your PC board, like you have to start those things kind of early. And actually Altium has made some of those things less important as it's evolved, but like, if you want to have like your 3D models all in a certain layer, like you have to get those things straight in the beginning. Have those things built up that way. Get all your templates and defaults all set up properly. There's great little things for consistency, like in your primitive settings, you can make it always override your font. So as a personal request, I'd love to never see Times New Roman again in a copy of Altium. I have no idea how that became, the default font, but I have spent a lot of my life removing Times New Roman from Altium. That's my soapbox.
That's a new one. I haven't heard that one before.
I don't know, but maybe it's because I did a stint in desktop publishing when I was like early 20s before I had an engineering job. But yeah, I love Arial. Arial's great for that kind of stuff.
Arial and Calibri, right?
That's Calibri is a great font. Yeah, I was just on someone like that the other day, but I hate Times New Roman. It just looks ancient. It looks like Windows 3.1. Anyway, yeah. So get all your primitives default set. I mean, Altium's really good to be able to store all that stuff in there. Even make your via templates. I thought that's a great feature that, like, if you don't use them and don't put them in there, they just kind of go to the wayside. And you're like, oh, well, it'd be really great if my vias were the same. I have to go figure out what they have to make each time, or having to copy things around all the time. So once all your defaults were done, then you can actually finally build your sample project. And one of the coolest things that I have found that I honestly, even in previous versions of Altium, I just kind of, I just didn't bother with it. Like I wasn't sold on the idea. I didn't have time to go look into it, whatever else. The draftsman stuff is so cool. I don't know when it got cool. But I think I did hash this one out with John at one point in time as well.
I think it's been cool for a couple years, and it's something we haven't talked about a lot, but something that's kind of near and dear to my heart as an old fabricator person. It's like, that's gold.
Well, so I recently did a design, and it became, it was two things. So when I was actually building all these templates, I had like found like some of the sample data that came with Altium had this really great, you know, put all your manufacturing data in a Gerber thing on the side, right? And we're always like, for years, you always saw like, here's my drill stack, here's my layer stack up, here's all this Gerber data you're throwing onto your Gerber, because, you know, Gerbers are the Bible, right? I mean, that's
right.
But it's really funny too, because I always know, like, once in a while I'd have a manufacturer asking for a drawing. I'm like, so yeah, fine, I'll put dimensions on my Gerber and send this to you. That's my drawing, right? But now I would not put, I mean, literally we start off with almost, I think I would pretty much start off with like a blank PCB file with nothing on it besides like just a placeholder, you know, a couple, you know, you just put like logos and stuff on it, a default file or something like that. And drop your 3D stuff in. Oh yeah, the MCAD integration is cool. That's too. That's another day.
I just heard another podcast on MCAD.
Yeah,
just,
well, I've been.
Warning, Gabriel.
That might be a more of a video thing, but yeah, what I was getting to was that I did a design that was super dense, and I'm like, and I was just telling the customer, like, look, this thing's not going to have silkscreen on it. I'm going to label some major components, like, I can either make it board pretty or I can put silkscreen on it, like, or make it work or I can put silkscreen on it, you know, pick one. And so I labeled major components. I literally like selected all, you know, all C's, all R's, you know, using the great little like find similar tools and stuff like that. Masked all those, left the U designators and some other special ones that were significant, and hit them all, placed the half dozen things or maybe a couple dozen reference designators that were left. And I dropped it into Draftsman. And I'm like, it just took every single part, put a nice designator on it, showed me where it was, nice and graphical, make the top level, you know, nice and big so you can see everything. And I found all the variables and tools I wanted. Like I was able to reduce the complexity of the step models to be, you know, be simplified so that, you know, it wasn't masking out my O201s. I guess it still see the designator inside the O201s. Mm-hmm. So like that, it did everything. And I'm like, who cares? I don't have silkscreen. This is, and then I even color coded it for through hole and SMT parts. I'm like, that saved me a lot of time. That was really cool.
That's great.
And then of course you had the fabrication one too, which is just like, and it went to, so that was all pretty slick. I was very happy with that. So that's something that's been around for a couple of years and I just never bothered because I'm stubborn.
Again, we just get stuck in our ways and sometimes we shine a light on it. It was the Altium company for a few minutes, and you know, we're all busy, it's complex, and now we're all disconnected physically to boot, and so you're not next to your fellow design buddies, right, and her going, dude, check out Draftsman, or you know, whatever, or Dudette.
Yeah.
So you know, everybody's, I always say everybody's innocent because it's really hard work.
Yeah. I mean, to have all the templates and have the whole design flow go through to where you have to mess with things so much less is really nice. And I just am working on a design right now where I just wrapped up that little bit there. So it was very, 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 very pleasantly surprised to see how well that worked.
Well, great. Well, Gabriel, thank you so much for, you know, giving us sort of a high level and in the weeds journey through your experience. I'm sure it'll be really valuable to everybody who had a chance to listen today. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. I had a blast. Thank you.
Thank you. For listeners, I'm going to drop some links below to some of the cool things Gabriel's been part of through Anita. Am I saying that right?
Anidia.
I knew I wasn't saying it right. Anidia. And the escape room text. And then I'll also share his LinkedIn profile so you can geek out with him if you have a chance. And I'll also share with you, of course, the page with Concord Pro and A365 Pro. So you can check that out and check out the videos and see if it's a good fit for you. So thanks so much to our audience for joining us today. We'll see you next time. Until then, remember to like and subscribe. It really helps us carry on this podcast. We appreciate your comments, and so we can queue up some other great guests on the podcast. So we'll see you next week. Until then, stay healthy, stay safe, and always remember to stay on track.